Well, good morning again. This time, please make yourself comfortable. I'm going to be talking for a little while. I want to share a message with you today. It's kind of a one-off. It's not in a series. And it's basically about what God is doing here and now. As we sit here, it's 2025. Something has changed in our culture in the last few years. And it's interesting and exciting. Before we dive into it, I want to just share a passage from the New Testament. And this is, the context is Paul, who was an early sort of key early church figure, traveled around Europe. He was telling people about Jesus. And at one point, he ends up in the city of Athens. And it says this. If you can read that on the microscopic writing on the screen, great. If not, I'm going to read it to you anyway. While Paul was waiting for them in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogue with both Jews and God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace day by day with those who happened to be there. A group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers began to debate with him. Some of them asked, "What is this babbler trying to say?" Others remarked, "He seems to be advocating foreign gods." They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. Then they took him and brought him to a meeting of the Areopagus, where they said to him, "May we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting? You are bringing some strange ideas to our ears, and we would like to know what they mean." All the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there spent their time doing nothing but talking about and listening to the latest ideas. Paul then stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus and said, "People of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, 'To an unknown God.' So you are ignorant of the very thing you worship, and this is what I'm going to proclaim to you." Few points on this, and then we're going to come back to this passage later. Firstly, Paul sees that the city of Athens is full of idols, and it upsets him. In other words, as a follower of Jesus, he turns up in this place, doesn't know anybody, but he's moved. He cares. He's moved when he sees that people have idols. They've bought into things and worshipped them, little gods that promised them things like money and sex and power, and those things would fulfill them. Really different from today, isn't it? But Paul believes that these idols that they have are empty. They're fruitless. They won't help you when it comes down to it. He sees this and he's sad. Secondly, he's in a place where people are talking about ideas. Athens is historically famous as a centre of philosophy and debate. People think about things, they chew on things in that city. They've heard loads of ideas. But when Paul turns up and talks about Jesus, who at this point, remember, nobody had heard of, it's new, it's exotic, it's weird, it's interesting. Let's fast forward to this century. In the wake of 9/11, the Western world was fearful about the idea of anything religious. Lots of young adults, especially my generation, had not embraced the Christian view of the world growing up. The church, we were told, was in terminal decline. Nobody's got any time for that old-fashioned churchy business anymore. We're doing other things. And if you may remember this, if you're of a certain generation, the new atheism movement was the fashion of the day. And in a way, it was like an old-fashioned religion. It had a clear view of the world. It had rules about what you could and couldn't do and think. It even had sort of priests, the so-called four horsemen of the movement. Does anyone remember this? Sam Harris, Daniel Dennett, Christopher Hitchens, and the world's most famous atheist, Richard Dawkins. And these guys, amongst a few others, wrote best-selling books, and they were at big conferences declaring the value of rejecting belief in God to anybody who would listen. Maybe at the peak of it, in 2008, Dawkins was the face of an advertising campaign on London buses declaring, "There's probably no God, so stop worrying and enjoy your life." Probably. In 2019, another famous atheist, the academic Steven Pinker, released a book called Enlightenment Now. And he'd done loads of research, and he said, basically, things have never been as good for humanity as they are now. Loads of research, and he said this was because science and reason had sorted everything out, and we didn't need God anymore because basically things were great and heading in the right direction. It all seemed so promising, so optimistic, so positive about the greatness of human nature. The future would just be better and better as we relied on our clever brains and our good intentions. But it was all empty. Despite what Dawkins Buses said, the biggest study of belief ever done across the UK clearly demonstrates that atheism and worrying about your life are closely tied together. Despite what Pinker said, we live in the most materially comfortable society there has ever been. No argument there, that's true. And yet, mental health is at an all-time low, and that cannot be argued either. Earlier this year, the Bible Society published this in-depth survey. They called it the Quiet Revival. Massive survey, rigorous, deep, well over 10,000 people. The last one was done in 2018, so it's about 6-7 years have passed. Let me tell you some of the key findings. In 2018, just 4% of 18 to 24-year-olds said they attended church at least monthly. Today, this has risen to 16%, with young men increasing from 4 to 21% and young women from 3% to 12%. This is now the second most likely age group to attend church regularly in the country. Church-going Christians now make up 12% of the population, up from 8% in 2018. In numerical terms, that's a growth from 3.7 million to 5.8 million, a 56% increase in about 6 years. 18 to 24-year-olds are the most likely to pray regularly, with 40% saying they pray at least monthly. More than half of them have engaged with a spiritual practice over the past 6 months, compared to 42% of those who are older than them. They are also the group most interested in learning about the Bible, with 37% of 18 to 24s saying they are curious to discover more about it. 31%, almost a third, of non-churchgoers say they would attend if invited by a friend or family member, including 34% of 18 to 24-year-olds. And finally, 45% of adults in the UK believe that the resurrection of Jesus really did happen. That's now, interestingly, that is not the same number as those who identify as Christians. They're just taking that one particular issue or fact and saying, this is what I think about it. 45% of adults in the UK say they believe the resurrection of Jesus really happened. Basically, participation and belief and interest in Christianity are up significantly. Why don't we feel this? Why isn't this more obvious? The report is called The Quiet Revival because the majority media is almost completely silent about this. But the biggest research done on it suggests that it's certainly happening. Now, if you're a Christian, you're sat here today and you're a Christian, you might go, oh, this is very encouraging. This sounds good. Great. Why is it happening? What's going on? Why are more than twice as many young men, for example, attending church than were 6 years ago? Here's, I think, the reasons. Firstly, there is a meaning crisis. There's a meaning crisis. New atheism, as fashionable as it was almost entirely the preserve of privileged, wealthy white men who had nice lives. It has nothing to say about meaning, purpose, or more significantly, hope if your life is falling apart. Richard Dawkins himself, who to be fair to him is consistent here, says, the universe is cold, heartless, and empty, so what? It's okay if you're in his position, maybe. But for most people, that's not good enough. If you live a long life with comfort and money and prestige, maybe it's kind of fine. But even then, people are saying, that's not enough. I've got a materially comfortable life. It's still, that alone is not satisfying. Without God and what God says, people are completely lost with nothing to fix an identity on except their own changeable feelings and what people around them say. As the cultural critic and church leader Mark Sayers says, our contemporary culture of progressive secularism is a failing temple, which, like the temples of the ancient world, exhausts and dismays, creating anxious and confused followers. So that's the first thing. But secondly, I've observed there is a new thirst for meaningful community. There is something in everybody, I think, that wants to be part of a healthy community. We need it, in fact, but it can be hard to find. Since the dark days of COVID lockdowns, remember those? It has become even more apparent that community is what everybody craves. History has shown us that the Church of Jesus, even though wildly imperfect, like every individual within it, is the proven place for community that is intergenerational, merges people of varying class backgrounds, and follows the teaching of Jesus by caring for one another and crying and laughing together as the best place for meaningful relationships there has ever been. You can find glimpses of it everywhere, but there's nothing like healthy church, people discovering or rediscovering that all over the Western world right now. But the other big thing that's happening is that there are credible pro-Christian influencers everywhere. Our mainstream media does not showcase this or talk about it, but if you have almost any interest in life, there are Christians, or at least people who see some positive thing about Christianity, all over the place, and particularly amongst influential thinkers. I want to give you just a few examples of this. Tom Holland, co-host of The Rest is History, the world's most popular history podcast. Anybody listen to Rest is History? Thanks, Joe. It is brilliant. I recommend it. The world's most popular history podcast, but not in Worthing. And Tom Holland is a serious historian, and he wrote a very influential book called Dominion, which demonstrates with great academic rigor how the West and all the values that we assume are good in the West, they're just all shaped by Christianity. And he's journeyed from a sort of disinterested agnostic to probably what you'd call a fan of Christianity, and he's moving in that direction. Then there's Paul Kingsnorth. He's a poet and an environmental campaigner. He was very into Wicca. He also wanted to change the world. But he found that, in his words, you keep going down and down and down, and you realize that the crisis is not technological or economic or political. It's cultural, which means it's actually spiritual. And on this journey, he eventually became a Christian, and he said, the more you have to answer these questions, what is a human, what is nature, what is the world, the more people will be ready for actual serious Christianity again. Full-strength Christianity, not the weak version, the real thing. And I think that's starting to happen, and I can feel it. Then there's Martin Shaw. He's a mythologist, basically somebody who likes stories. He runs a myth school, which sounds really cool to me. It's one of those things, people hang out in the wilderness and they tell stories and they grow beards, mainly the men. And during lockdown, he found himself drawn to go out into the woods every night. And he did this for 101 nights in a row. And while he was doing this, he found himself praying and eventually having some profound spiritual experiences, and he ultimately became a Christian. Then you've got Ayaan Hirsi Ali, who was probably the most famous female atheist in the world at one point. And she came out of a difficult context in Somalia. Somalia is not a real place. It's not a region of Italy. She came from Somalia. But in 2023, she announced that she'd become a Christian. And she and her husband, the historian Niall Ferguson, got baptized. And she's now telling the world, we need Christianity. Then there's Louise Perry. Her book, The Case Against the Sexual Revolution, is really interesting. And her story is she grew up with a fairly standard secular perspective on relationships and on sex. And then she worked in a rape crisis centre and concluded that our culture's view of sexuality does not work in practice. And she's a very bright woman. She did a load of research. And basically she concluded that the healthiest view of sexuality, especially for women, is the historical Christian one. Not yet a Christian herself, but she says she's moving that way, and a number of her friends have become Christians. Then you've got Molly Worthen, the journalist and historian of religion. And she grew up in a secular household. She was agnostic about God. She used to write books and articles criticizing Christians, not always unfairly. But a couple of years ago, when researching Jesus, she slowly became convinced the resurrection happened, and she became a Christian herself. Moving a little out of academia, Nick Cave, the Australian rock star. If you're into alternative rock, he's like the peak of cool. Really sadly, his son died about 10 years ago at the age of 15 after an accident. And that made Nick Cave think long and hard about life. And eventually he said, I couldn't resist the ringing intensity of Christ, which is a very Nick Cave way of putting it. And he called his most recent album about his faith journey, Wild God. Then you've got Adam Peaty, the swimmer, maybe the best breaststroke swimmer of all time. Holds the world record many times over, won Olympic golds. He tasted at a young age all the success the world tells you that you need. But then he had a severe mental health crisis, problems of depression and alcohol that he's quite open about. In 2023, he became a Christian and he announced, for me, the only fulfillment and the only peace is every Sunday at church. Meanwhile, loads of Premier League footballers, from Alisson Becker, who recently won the league, to Bukayo Saka, who didn't, are very open about their faith. And some have gone on social media with videos of themselves baptizing their teammates. So whether your interest is history or story or sociology or sport or science, wherever you look, there are interesting people who have come to believe the Christian story is true or at minimum make sense of the world as we find it. And this really opens things up for people, and it is happening at every level of society. But what difference does this make? When people decide to follow Jesus, maybe they get stuck into church, what happens? What does it change? Back to the Quiet Revival report, and it says this. 75% of churchgoers agree their life feels meaningful compared to 49% of non-churchgoers. 69% of churchgoers agree they feel hopeful about their future compared to 46% of non-churchgoers. Interestingly, 55% of churchgoers agree they feel close to the people in their local area compared to only 28% of non-churchgoers. Now, none of these numbers are perfect. 100% of Christians have reasons to be hopeful, for example, but some of them are not, I don't know why. But it's clear that participating in the Christian life, which is what church is about, makes a notable difference on a large scale. Maybe we should get this put on the side of a bus because the data is here. Believing there is no God does not help you stop worrying and enjoying your life. It doesn't. That's not just an opinion. The evidence of people's lives en masse tells us in practice that that is the case. So why do all sorts of people become Christians? Only Christianity provides a cohesive view of the world that touches and makes sense of all of the disciplines. It's the only thing big enough to house science and art and story and history and philosophy and social science and for all of them to make sense at the same time. It's also the only place where there's more than a set of debatable ideas. There's a person, a power, the one who makes the seed grow. From the point of view of modern secular culture, it's inexplicable that anybody in this day and age will become a Christian. But people are, in droves. Now, none of that in itself tells us that Christianity is true. Christianity is true because Jesus resurrected from death in the first century and he's God. However, if Christianity is true, then applying what it says should work. It should make sense of human experience. And when the way of Jesus is embraced and lived, it should make a tangible difference. And increasingly, the data tells us it does for people from all walks of life. Let's go back to the passage I read at the beginning. Oh, Ian, help me. Don't know what happened there. Back to the passage I read at the beginning. Remember, Paul is in the city of Athens. He's speaking to spiritually interested people. They've got big questions. They've got big ideas. And he's this quirky, weird follower of Jesus that nobody's ever heard of. And I just want to focus on some of the later words in that passage. Because what Paul does, I think, speaks to what we need to do now as followers of Jesus. And if you're here today and you're not a follower of Jesus, what I'm about to say is how Christians should be towards you. Okay? You can judge the Christians on this. You have my permission. So just to rehearse what was said, Paul then stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus and said, "People of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, 'To an unknown God.' So you are ignorant of the very thing you worship, and that is what I'm going to proclaim to you." What Paul does in Athens tells us at least three ways to behave towards people who are spiritually open, which increasingly, as we've just seen, they are. First thing he does, Acknowledge human nature. Everybody is religious. Acknowledge human nature. Everybody's religious. Human nature, I think Paul really saw this, is naturally religious. People often don't like that word, but the majority of people who have ever lived anywhere by far have believed in a reality beyond what is visible every day. People have believed in God or gods and so on. But actually, even people who claim no religion are religious in the strictest sense, because even if they don't identify as a Hindu or Jewish or whatever, they build their life around something. Something is the thing they live for, sacrifice for, give their energy and time to. It's their religion, whether it's a person or money or success, whatever it may be. And the Athenians did like everybody else. They had physical idols, they carved stuff, they made stuff. We might not do that, but it's basically the same thing. People always do it. We can't avoid making something the thing we look to in life for hope and security and identity. You can't not do it. When we, as followers of Jesus, think about the time that we're in and how to speak to people, start with this. Your friends and family, whatever they say about Jesus, live for something. Their trust, their hope, their security is in something. Be curious about what that is. Ask questions. People love being given a chance to say what they think, to share their opinions. Give it to them. Be interested in them. It's an act of love. Secondly, be sensitive to the hopes and dreams that people have. One of the idols in Athens, Paul notices this, is a tribute to an unknown god. That's a strange thing, isn't it? Somebody made an idol for a god that they knew nothing about. Why would you do that? In Athens at the time, people believed that if there was a plague or a disaster, none of the known gods ever helped them. They reached out to all these different gods for help. No help came. Their hope or dream was to get help when things were hard. And so it turned out historically the Cretans had advised them to make altars to unknown gods. It was kind of a way of covering all your bases. Like, if we try to appease all the gods, including the ones we've never heard of, maybe one of them will help. That was the idea. But it was also an indication that they were vulnerable, that they knew that maybe there was a power out there that they knew nothing of. They're spiritually interested. And Paul acknowledges this. He sees what they're doing and why. In the same way, today people often reach out to God or they want the help of God, and there's a spiritual longing. That's why people have religions and idols and things that they look for to answer questions and bring security. And that's what we're seeing right now. The secular story has nothing to say to people. And so they're restless, uncertain, spiritually curious. And we should be sensitive to that. There are lots of ways to talk about what Christians believe and why, but one that can get missed is to talk in terms of the hopes and dreams that people already have. The way to represent Jesus to people is not to dismiss those deep hopes and dreams, but to see where they lead. So along with being curious about what people believe, it's also great to be curious about what they're really looking for. Again, it's asking questions. It's being interested. The final point, and I'll finish very soon. If you talk about Jesus. Paul says to the Athenians, if you are ignorant of the very thing you worship, and that is what I'm going to proclaim to you. Now that word ignorance sounds very strong, doesn't it? Remember, this is English translation. It sounds very strong. But Paul's just saying, you guys, you don't know because nobody's told you about the unknown God you're seeking. And I want to help you with exactly that. He's not arrogant, he's not insensitive, but he knows Jesus. Paul had a personal encounter with Jesus, changed his life, not because Paul was great or more intelligent or anything like that. He just wants to tell people. It's exciting, it's changed his life. He wants to tell everybody. In the same way, if you find yourself in conversation about spiritual things, you're asking these questions, it's great to do a lot of listening. But if someone's curious about what you believe or what you think, talk about Jesus. It's great to talk about God in general, or it's great to talk about church if you like church, or your own story, fantastic. But major on Jesus. Jesus is the answer to the questions. He's the one standing at the end of all the spiritual inquiry. He's the one who helps us to understand what God is like and move him from unknown God to known God. He is also the one who is moving people from restless to spiritually interested to becoming Christians in every country in the world right now. So be encouraged. Pray for our nation. Take the opportunities. And if you're not a follower of Jesus yourself and you want to know more, I'd really love to chat with you after the service. Back to Matt, who's going to continue to lead us.